All right, it's State Player here on 720 WGN. Award-winning veteran journalist Ashley Banfield is joining WGN America as the host of a new hour-long news and talk show, Banfield. Starting March 1st, Banfield will air weeknights at 9 Central as part of News Nation, offering in-depth coverage and the top news stories. And to talk about it all, Ashley joins us on the phone line. Ashley, welcome in.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Congratulations on the new show. Are you getting excited? You getting hyped up?
I'm so excited, but I'm also really tired. When you launch the show, it's like 18-hour days for about 4 to 6 weeks, and so we're right there. We're heading towards Monday, and we're about to leap into it with aplomb.
I was seeing in the general manager's office, she's got a TV in there, and we were watching you do some interviews and so forth. I don't even know what you call that when it's kind of like not being streamed live on. You can just watch what's going on in your studio and stuff. And the prep process for this, I mean, it's pretty intense because you want to get it right the first day. It's not like you're going on air Monday for the first time. You've run through some shows already.
Yeah, we've run through a few, and we did a few rehearsals, which I think you might have seen a rehearsal where, you know, IFBs are those little things in your ear that give you the time left and the, oh my gosh, we don't have that tape and all that information that the viewer doesn't get to hear, but I do. And sometimes that IFB is at a decibel level that's deafening and you have to maintain this nice smile.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah.
So we've been getting some of those kinks out, you know, with new studios, new crews, new everything. It's like a basketball team. You all have to figure out how to work together before you can be a well-oiled machine.
But you're no stranger to this either. And then you're doing this from your home base in New York. Tell us a little bit about how you see the structure of the show and then maybe some of the guests you've got on your wish list.
So the best part of the structure of the show is that, Dave, it's just truly a Larry King reboot, which is delightful because he just had that magical moment at 10 o'clock Eastern where everybody had been, you know, bombarded with news all day, and then they just exhaled at 9.
Yeah.
And he would do a deep dive with someone, and there would be no pressure to race to get the last 5 questions stuffed into a, you know, a 2-minute interview. And he had the time to just peel back layer upon layer of onion and got the greatest reactions, the greatest sort of insights into how these people tick because of that. And so we've got the same format, a full hour where we can just go anywhere and I can mine any vein where that, you know, that thought provoker, that thought leader, that celebrity, that politician is choosing to go.
Well, and when you're watching the news and it's, you know, it's a 24/7 cycle. So, I mean, if you can really exhaust yourself, you know, watching these stories over and over again. You're right. When Larry came on, it was a nice breather. It was appointment viewing. You always wanted to see who his guests were. And I love that's what you're doing for the concept of the show.
Yeah. And I think the other issue that is different now than since Larry has passed is that the cable landscape is really, really different. It has morphed completely since I joined National Cable News back in 1999. I think, you know, especially in the last 10 years, people have just retreated at pace to their echo chambers, and they've been, you know, bouncing around in those echo chambers and yelling and screaming at each other and not listening to each other, and that's bruising. And so, like eating too much junk food for too long, eventually you need a cleanse. So
yeah,
I really look
true.
At the network and this show as a news cleanse from the, you know, from the too much fun, too much drinking last night and on all the programs you've been imbibing.
Absolutely. Who you got on your first week? Like, who's on your first week? And then I want to hear kind of who's on your wish list.
Yeah, so some of my favorite people are kicking off the show. Aaron Sorkin is our lead guest, who's just critically acclaimed. The guy has more hardware than you can put in a warehouse. He wins for directing. He wins for screenwriting. He wins for being a playwright. His actors all win for being best, you know, supporting and best lead. I mean, everything he touches seems to just turn to gold. So I can't wait to find out what's his secret sauce, like what makes him so special and why him, right? We all work hard. We all try hard. All of my guests have something, and I'm trying to get at that special something. Maybe we can get a little, you know, tip from them as to how to be better at our lives and our work. And then Bryan Cranston is on. I call him like the male Meryl Streep. He's so good. He's so versatile. He's so lovely and magnanimous. He owns a liquor company, so we had mezcal cocktails throughout the whole hour.
Nice. I like that.
And Yeah, and Robin Wright, who has just directed her first feature-length film and is just such a delightful, beautiful, phenomenal actor. She's going to be on week one as well. And you know, top of my list, and this will sound funny, but it's
no.
The Queen.
There's wish lists. I got wish lists, too. I mean, it's – and you got to hit them, you know, before they're gone. So who's on your list?
Well, so I'll never get her, but, it's Queen Elizabeth. That's the kind of interview that's so elusive. It's the unicorn for journalists, right? The person who spent, you know, the better part of 8 decades in service to something other than herself or her family. Someone who has truly taken on a mission that she didn't ask for, nor did her father ask for royalty. They both got kind of lumped in by, you know, those in her family who chose against that mission. Mm-hmm. And she's done it. She has done it. And the pain and suffering that it has caused her and her loved ones. And I just would love to know how someone can suffer through that and not break. She's never broken.
Yeah.
So it's my top wish list guest, which I, you know, highly doubt I or anybody else
well,
is going
to
get.
I have her cell. I'll just text it to you after the interview. You can give her a call.
I knew you would. You know, Dave, you're that guy. You're that friend. You're that friend who's got a guy.
Yeah, I got a guy. We're talking to Ashley Banfield. Her new show debuts on WGN America as part of News Nation weeknights at 9 Central this coming Monday. And there's more with her next on 720 WGN. Ashley Banfield, I'm playing that because I knew you sang in a rock band, and you and I grew up probably in the same era in the 1980s. So we will talk about that in a little bit. but just getting to know you, you know, and I know a lot of folks have seen you over the years, of course, on CNN and so forth. But you started your broadcast career in Canada, but you also freelanced very early on as an associate producer for ABC World News Tonight. So you got your feet wet pretty early on.
I did. That was such an amazing experience. At the time, I started in local news. I had been working for a couple of years, and I decided to strap a backpack on and walk around the world for a year.
Wow.
And not the easy part of the world that has Eurorail passes, the parts of the world that are at war and, you know, that you have to get a fishing boat to get to the next island, to get to the next, you know, possible place you could find food. And so all through Southeast Asia, the Middle East, India and the subcontinent, that was sort of my journey. And when I got to Moscow, I had taken the Trans-Siberian Railway. This was still when it was Soviet Union.
Wow.
And lo and behold, there was a summit between President Bush, the first President Bush, and Gorbachev. And Peter Jennings was there, and I knew he was Canadian, and I'd already made contact with him, you know, a couple of years before. And I said, I will work for free. I'm here in Moscow. You're all here. You could probably use the free labor. So put me to work. And they did. It was great.
Wow. So tell me how, like, what happened in childhood, in college, in high school that you said, you know, like, this is what I want to do for a living.
I think, Dave, I had the luckiest epiphany in the world, and I only wish this on everybody out there who's got kids who are 14-ish, because I was 14, and I was sitting in Mrs. Sharp's British history class, and I suddenly realized that somebody had to have written all these words down, because somebody saw them, and somebody wrote it down and recorded it, and they were the first ones there. And that discovery seemed to be sort of the magical part of what I was learning, which was now history. And I thought, you know, there are all these, you know, horrible things and civil war going on in Beirut every night on the national news. That's what I want to do. I want to be in the middle of that crazy stuff and see what really happens before it becomes history.
Pretty
and
bold.
I never wavered. Yeah, never wavered. I right there at age 14, I said, okay, that's what I'm doing.
So is getting on stage and singing with a rock band. Is that true? Or did you what's your music history here?
Everybody has a secret hobby.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. Hey, that's cool. That's cool. Was that in high school, college? What was that?
Yeah, well, I'm no introvert, right? I grew up, you know, on right. stage and yelling and singing and dancing and being an idiot. And for a while, I thought, gosh, maybe I should be on Broadway. And I know I had a couple of crazy aunts who wore fur boas who said, she's going to be on Broadway.
Cute.
But, you know, that 10, you know, that history class when I was 14, that was it. I realized, Road to Broadway is paved with a lot of really hungry people. So I think I'm going to use the education I'm going to get and the smarts that I have and my fascination with language and current events and culture, and I'm just going to go for it. And you know what? What an idiot I was. I mean, I had no idea how hard it was going to be.
No, but I mean, that's, you know, starting from the ground up and figuring it out for yourself, you've done pretty well for yourself. You went to Dallas, you were hired by CNBC, but you really came into viewers' living rooms on a whole new level, including mine. And I knew your name in 24 hours when you were reporting a 9/11, when you were blocks away from the World Trade Center. I mean, and you know what I do. That thrusted you. Into a national spotlight.
It did. And I think a lot of people think that because when they first saw me on 9/11, I was blocks away. But they, about 2 hours prior, would have heard me having just escaped with my life because I was under the North Tower when it came down and was hit with the debris and like hit hard with the debris and almost died. Not hit with a little bit of dust as it was flying up the street. I was about a block and a half from the footprint. And so it was a mind-blowing, life-altering, psychosis-altering experience. And I still, to this day, can't believe that I was living in an apocalypse and still thinking about my job, you know? But I think that most people think I was so brave, and the truth is I was just so beyond scared. And I must have masked it somehow.
But the strength that you had on air out of that, I thought to myself, that must have been the most harrowing moment of your life, but you took it from the inside out and needed to provide information to the public on what was going on because you were there. Like, you knew you had a job to do, and you kind of had to pull up the pants and tighten that belt and just get on air and do what you did.
Yeah, and it was like nothing I had ever experienced before, nor would I ever experience anything like that again, God willing.
Yeah.
But you know something, it changed me. And not for the better. I probably should have seen counseling after that, but I just went shipped out right to Afghanistan right away, and then I was just, you know.
Yeah, think about what you just said. You went from there to Afghanistan, where the war on terrorism had just begun. From that, I mean, that's, you know, that's a few years of some pretty wild reporting.
It was. I look at it now and I think, what were you thinking? You know, like you should have stopped down for a minute and realized, like, you're in a really dangerous place and you're not even aware of what you don't know. I was in my early 30s and you think you're so smart then. And I think, you know, I never was reckless with decisions, but I look back now and I think I sure could have been more aware of what I was unaware of. And thank God I got out of there. But a lot of colleagues who were just hours down the road from me were slaughtered. So, yeah, I think, again, the counseling thing would have helped. Yeah. I should have done that a lot sooner.
Never
would have
too
been
late.
A really smart idea.
Yeah.
It's never too late. And I got to be honest, I get more sad and more profoundly affected by 9/11 in the years since.
My bad.
Yeah.
We all did, but you lived it. I mean, you were there. You're one of the few. Like, there was a broadcaster here, Carol Marine, who was also there working for. Remember Carol? Yeah. And working for CBS. And I just remember hearing her stories and seeing on the air. And she said, really, in all my years of reporting, that moment in my life was one of the. It shook me to the core. And and may have shaped what you've done.
Yeah, I mean, it really did hollow out a big part of my upper, tract. And I, even now, just talking about it now, I think, oh boy, I better wrap this conversation up because I might lose it.
All right.
I've lost age before, even in front of like hundreds of people giving a speech where I thought everything was going great. And then all of a sudden the topic turned to 9/11 and I just started to gulp, you know. And for anybody out there who's listening who, you know, thinks about their mental health and thinks, oh, gee, I better not say anything out loud, say it out loud.
Yeah.
For God's sake, we're all human and these things really affect us in a physical way. So, you know, do something about it. We go and see a doctor when we get a sniffle.
That's true. That's true.
It's not a sniffle. It's way bigger.
That's absolutely true. And I am going to pivot here because you and I, so Larry Potash is our WGN TV morning news anchor. He was on in our first hour, and you and I and him are the same age, early 40s, and we all grew up in the same era. So we're
almost early 40s.
You're welcome. And and we did an 80s trivia quiz, because that's kind of when we grew up and went to high school and all that stuff. So we want to see if you want to play a little game and see how to test your 80s knowledge, maybe some movie knowledge. You ready?
Man, you had me at do you wanna.
Okay, let's hit the music, Tom. All right, here we go. Which 80s movie was Alan Rickman's first feature role? Die Hard, Aliens, or Dirty Dancing?
Oh, Alien?
It was Die Hard. He was the bad guy. That it was Die Hard when he was thrown off the building in Die Hard. All right.
Isn't that terrible?
That is terrible.
I have seen Die Hard. My husband has Star Wars, so I guess I get a pass.
All right. What movie has the famous line? This is an easy one. I am serious, and don't call me Shirley. Was it Flashdance?
I just interviewed the sucker, the director, the writer. I just interviewed him.
See? Yep. Absolutely. Which Steven Spielberg classic featured a character trying to phone home? Back to the Future, E.T., or Poltergeist? Yeah, E.T. That's an easy one. Which 80s action flick featured two eventual state governors? Was it The Terminator, Conan the Barbarian, or The Predator?
Well, it's definitely the Terminator, but also Conan, because it's the same guy. It's Schwarzenegger.
All right, Tom, tell me about Predator.
So it was Predator because it features Arnold Schwarzenegger and Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura.
It was in that? Oh, Lord, I didn't see that third one.
Yeah, me neither. All right. Which of the following actors did not appear in The Outsiders? Patrick Swayze, Tom Cruise, Kevin Bacon, or Rob Lowe?
Tom Cruise.
It was Kevin Bacon.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, it was Kevin Bacon. All right. How about the Lost Boys? What were they winding up finding a group? What were they fighting? They were fighting a group of vampires, aliens, or zombies? The Lost Boys.
What was the first? The Lost Boys?
Yeah.
And what were the choices again? Aliens, zombies, or
Vampires, aliens, or zombies? Who did they end up fighting in Lost Boys?
Vampires.
Vampires, of course. All right, last one. In Back to the Future, why does Lorraine mistakenly refer to Marty as Calvin? A, because he's wearing Calvin Klein underwear, because he's wearing a Calvin Klein t-shirt, or because he looks like...
It is the underwear.
Yep. You did pretty well. You did pretty well there, Ashley.
Here's the deal. I didn't see Die Hard, so I couldn't answer that one properly. And also, I have lost my mind.
Yes, you have. I'm sure you are at the total end of your day. Is this the last conversation you're having today?
It is, but I have two more files that I'm going to read, and one of them is on Keith Olbermann, and I know it's going to be really long, because he's got so much in his life that I have to go back over and remember.
Is there a... is there a cocktail in your future, in an hour, maybe 90 minutes?
So I'm on keto, but the truth is Bryan Cranston owns a liquor company. And so I had to have a drink with him because he has this mezcal and his drink is called the Cranstonian.
I like that. All right.
It's
okay.
Awesome.
That's very cool.
It actually tastes good. I don't like tequila. I don't like mezcal. I had a terrible, situation
Same
in college.
Here. Same here.
And I can't even smell it. But I went to the Hair of the Dog because I love Bryan Cranston and I wanted to try his Dos Hombres. And I'm telling you, the Cranstonian is a really good drink, and that's coming from a person who hates tequila.
It's funny you say that, because I have a friend that drinks tequila, and she just opened a bottle. And from 30 years ago, I feel like I have to run from the room. Can't do it anymore.
You do. You know what? You do run from the room. I run from the room, and I was really kind of nervous about that show.
I had a big
old drink right in front of me for the whole show. I thought I was going to get queasy.
I bet you did. Banfield premieres Monday at 9 Central on WGN America, of course, a part of News Nation. Break a leg and enjoy the show next week.
Thank you, Dave Plyer, and we're going to have a cocktail in person when this whole madness ends.
I hope so. Thanks, Ashley. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Cheers to you. All right. We'll get ready for the Golden Globes after the news next here on 720 WGN.